Before we get started, I want to let you know some of the folks who have made it possible. Superlime Plus, who offers an all-natural liquid lime that goes to work immediately to raise the pH of your soil for better hay and crop production with less weeds. And Crossroads Farm and Nursery. Whether you're a seasoned landscaper, garden center, or a DIY homeowner, Crossroads Farm and Nursery is your place for everything from azaleas to zebragrass and everything in between.
Larry said, "Robin, go get my eggs for me." He'd had cataract surgery. So I went and fed his chicken and got the eggs for him. And right when I got out of the truck at a chicken pen, it started raining. I mean, them old long drops. And I got in there, and I was getting wet, and I was aggravated, and it was muddy, and it's a mess in a chicken pen anyway, and things just wasn't going good. I reached in there in that second egg house, whatever you call them, little boxes they put in. And I felt something that didn't feel just like an egg.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Hayden, Alabama podcast, where we're Southern Storytellers. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
Terry.
I'm Robin.
He's back. Both of them back.
Both of them.
This is a dynamic duo.
Both of them back.
We got two of the most infamous storytellers that we've had on the show.
Yep.
Back in the studio.
I hope that it exponentiates.
Is that the word?
Watch out. I don't know if that's the right word.
Watch out.
I'm making up words over here already.
Hope it explodes like it did last time.
That's right, man. I'm super excited to hear their stories tonight and fellowship, and I don't think we'll regret it.
Nope.
Mr. Terry.
Yes, sir.
It's been a little while.
It's been a good little while.
Tell us a story.
Okay. All right, both of y'all said y'all knew my grandson, Josh, which is my oldest grandson. He's a little bit younger than y'all. He just turned 40 a few months ago. And early Monday morning, I was going to have to go to Coleman to pick up a load of ammonia nitrate on the pickup for go around peas and butter beans and whatever. And, I made sure I had everything ready to go. And then that morning, my wife, Barbara, said, "You gonna let Josh go with you?" Now he's 5 months old. I said, "No, I don't need to cure him." Off like that at 5 months old. She said, "Well, if I go somewhere, I got to carry him." So I said, "Well, put his chair in the truck. You know, what all you got to have with a 5 month old." She loaded up in the truck, and old Josh just set up in it like a big man. But I made a little more sure that I had plenty of gas and I had everything that I needed, you know, because I got a kid with me. And we got to Coleman and got the fertilizer loaded. And I come back out and Josh is just sitting up there looking around. I mean, he ain't whimpered. He ain't said nothing. You know, he just being a little soldier.
Oh, yeah.
And so we headed on back toward home and come on back down below Dodge City and on down there a little while further, you got a highway that crosses the interstate, but there's no exit. I don't know what, it's something about Hansville somewhere, you know, I don't know the number of that road. But anyhow, come on past it a little ways, you start uphill and there's a guardrail on the right. Going up the hill, I blowed out a tire. Blowed out a right back tire.
Oh, man.
I said, "Here I am with that little kid in here." And I didn't want to go to flagging nobody with a baby in there with me. And, of course, I had an old Ford Jack that I'm sure y'all have seen them where you got a long handle you put together and you put it up in there and you like making ice cream. Mm-hmm. You know, you twist it to jack it up. And I got the jack under there. At first, I got up and I knew I had to, you know, do some rigging. First, I got up in the back of the truck and I stacked all the fertilizer. I had about a ton and a half, you know, on the pickup. I stacked it all on the left-hand side to get the weight off the right-hand side. and I got the jack under there, and I could get it jacked up far enough to pull a flat tire off, but it wasn't tall enough to get the good tire on. And so, man, what am I going to do? And I mean, I tried. The jack hadn't mowed a jack, but it was slipping. Mm-hmm. And I'm hitting my knuckles on the ground. I mean, on the pavement, skinning my knuckles, trying to get that thing jacked up. And I'm praying a little, too, that the boy makes it all right. And
them little ones make you nervous, don't they?
Yeah. But anyhow, we got it tough. I done all I could do right there. And I thinks, well, if I put that flat tire back on there and go get me a big rock and put under it and let it back down and then get me another rock and put that jack on it, if I can get it jacked up the same amount, I can get the good tire on it. And I every few minutes I'd check on Josh, and he's up just looking. I mean, he didn't mess up no bridges. He didn't do nothing.
That's
he
good.
That was a miracle right there.
Uh-huh.
He was
5
just
months old for
biblical
sure.
proportion.
He was just looking. But anyhow, you can believe it or not, when I stepped over the guardrail to go hunt me a rock, I almost stepped on an 8-ton hydraulic jack and a handle.
No.
Yeah.
One of them old bottle jacks.
It's an 8. I got the picture.
And the handle.
I got the picture.
Hold that up, Mr. Chair. Just hold up where the camera can see it. I got the picture.
I still got the jack. I'm not sure it's the same handle, but I know it's the same jack. I can keep it. I called it the Miracle Jack. But anyhow, I'm a Thomas like he is, and I'm a doubter till somebody shows me something. You know, I just doubt.
Just doubt a little bit.
Yeah.
But there ain't no
and
doubt.
I'm thinking that thing ain't going to jack nothing up. Somebody stowed it away. That's what I'm thinking. But I went on and got it and slid it up under there, got everything ready, and it jacked it up as pretty as you ever saw. And I put that. Got the tire on it and everything ready to go and loaded the jack up. But then I never did get to use it, but a time or two, and then it wouldn't work no more. So I don't know if somebody accidentally left it there or it didn't work for them and they threw it away. It was laying real neatly right beside of that guardrail.
The Lord put that there.
That gets another question. Did he put it, what I got to thinking, did he put it there?
Or did he make it work?
Did he put it there? Or did somebody else put it there and he let me have that blowout right there? That's another way to look at it.
Or like Robin said, did he just make it work? And that it might have been bad.
Yeah.
And he just made it work.
I've told that story at church a few times over the years. See, this happened 40 years ago a few times. And Brother Wolf out of Cullman County was our pastor for a while over at Mount View. And I told it. And I said, but right after then, it wouldn't work. He said, all you needed was one time.
That's all you needed was that one time.
Yeah. So that's the real jack right there.
And so you jacked it up, put the tire back on. You and Josh made it home safe.
And he ain't messed up no britches. And he ain't cried for no bottle. And he ain't said nothing.
What'd your wife say when you got home and told her all the happenings?
It was hard for her to believe, but she saw the jack.
There it is.
And she didn't know the jack before then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah, I still got that thing. I got it out the other day and got Tammy to make me a picture.
That was good.
Yeah, I said 8-ton. It's at least an 8-ton jack.
Yeah.
You know, you got 15-ton jacks, 20-ton jacks.
It was enough to do the job that
day.
It was
enough to do the job, and it worked. And there was a miracle involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
it's several.
I got to think, if God had put the jack there, why didn't he give me a new one?
Why wasn't the new one? Well, it's like your preacher said, you just needed to use it one time.
That's all.
Needed you off the road anyway.
Yeah.
That's a good story, Mr. Terry.
That was a good one.
I'm going to leave that picture.
Yeah, leave it. Please do. We'll leave it here in the shed. That's a good memory and everything. Well, Robin, I think you've loaded the barrel up, or loaded the clip up, rather.
Well, I got one, too, about my grandson that happened to us this last weekend. Bless his heart, his name's Oak, and Jake's his daddy, and Alex is his mother. And he's bad allergic to peanuts. I mean, deathly allergic to them. They keep an EpiPen with them all the time, because if he gets in contact with that protein, his throat will swell shut, and it can get very dire, very fast, very serious. I'm not making fun of that. Well, they had a ball tournament this weekend. Some other grandson did it. They playing all time somewhere. Anyway, I went up to my in-laws, these children's great-grandparents, Brenda and Larry. Y'all remember them. And we sit around waiting for the ball game start, and Larry said, "Robin, go get my eggs for me." He'd had cataract surgery recently, and he wasn't supposed to pick up over 10 pounds. So I went and fed his chicken and got his eggs for him. And right when I got out of the truck at a chicken pen, it started raining. I mean, them old long drops. And I got in there, and I was getting wet, and I was aggravated, and it was muddy, and it's a mess in a chicken pen anyway, and things just wasn't going good. I reached in there in that second egg house, whatever you call them, little boxes they put in. And I felt something that didn't feel just like an egg. As a matter of fact, the more I felt it, the more it felt like a snake. And I come out of there with a chicken snake, and he's wrapped, his tail's wrapped around my pinky, and everywhere I went, that snake went with me. That's when I discovered I hadn't completely quit talking ugly.
Oh.
Because I called that snake a lot of things.
He said, "I hadn't completely quit talking ugly."
And anyway, I heard my old dad-in-law hollering at me, and I'm trying to get these eggs and fight off the snake, and there's some guineas in there, the demons from somewhere.
They're from Sardis.
And they were making so much racket, I couldn't hear nothing. I come out, and he said, "Brenda's fell down up there."
Oh, no.
And she had gone down there to get them some tomato soup, because that's what Oak wanted to eat. And Oak had one of these allergic reactions, and they had spent the whole night in the emergency room. It was terrible. Scared us all to death. I'm out here wet with chicken mess all over me, a chicken snake. Everything, and Brenda done fell down and broke her arm. She won't listen. And as she says, that dress was overhead, bless her heart, and Modesty went out the window. She said, "Robin, you done seen Christmas, ain't you?" I don't know that I wanted to see that holiday.
It don't need to come back around anytime soon, huh?
It ain't got to be an annual event at all. Oh. We finally got her up and got her hand seen about a little bit, took pictures of it, sent it to my son, who's a doctor, and he said she needs to go get it x-rayed. I said that's what I told her, but she wouldn't do it. Uh-oh.
That's our doctor, though.
I got a text from Jake, and he said, anyhow. I got a text from Jake and said, Tripp had done eat some more peanut butter and had to go back and get another EpiPen, and my needles are about that long.
Eat some more peanut butter?
Yeah. All right, this time he ate peanut butter. We don't know what happened the first time.
This is all in the same day, right?
Yeah, second time. Oh, and he was up there, and oh, he was so pitiful. And it scared us all to death.
Well, of course
I like
it
to
did.
Call myself level-headed. You know, I keep cool during high-stress moments. But I done lost it. We was all squalling, and That little baby's on Hutch, Daddy, and Hutch.
Oh, yeah, man.
We were all pulling for him. We stopped two or three times and just prayed.
Yeah.
And you ain't prayed, do you pray with some of them New Zion Pentecostals?
they get a hold to it.
They get after it, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's good. Mm-hmm. I want them praying for me when I get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And all this time, I got a sermon to preach Sunday, and I ain't sure what I know I'm in Ephesians. I know I want to come out of Ephesians, but it just ain't coming together. You know what I'm talking about, Phil. Sometimes it just don't come together.
Yeah.
And I got to think about the end of Ephesians when you put on the full armor of God. Why you put on the armor of God when the devil throws his flaming missiles at you?
Mm-hmm.
When I was in that chicken pen, wallowing around with that snake and my mother-in-law and seeing Christmas and June and July and all that, that's when the flaming missiles were coming.
Mm-hmm.
But fellas, I want to tell you something. That's when you need to put on the armor.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you need to rise to the occasion. That's when you need to get that shield of faith and that sword of spirit and that helmet of salvation, that belt of truth, and shod your feet with the gospel and breastplate of righteousness. You need to have that armor and have it handy and keep it on. Because, listen, anybody can get a Christian on Sunday when the weather's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
When the baby's sick and the bills are late,
and chicken snakes around your arm.
Mm-hmm. Chicken snakes are attacking. That's when you need to put on that full armor.
That's
of God.
When you had better had it on.
Yeah, you need to leave it on.
I knew the devil was in it when the chicken snake was involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's characteristic. But
that's what I preached on Sunday. So the folks at Pleasant Hill Baptist Church done heard that story. And I squalled when I told it. I'm surprised I ain't calling now, but I'm glad I ain't. Let's go on to Mr. Terry for another one before I start.
Well, just for the audience, baby's okay now, recovering.
Yes, he's fine. He's running around here like a chicken.
Snake.
There you go.
Like a nicking snake.
Well, I'm glad that day's over with. I'm glad he's better, and I know Mom and Dad are too. That's right.
Well, it just kind of got to me, you know. You use it more than it does. Because it's so serious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You see that little dude swole up like that, and his mama and his daddy are scared.
Yeah, you're kind of helpless.
Yeah, you can't do nothing.
You can't do nothing. I mean, you can jump up and down, but don't do no good.
That's right.
Just got to feel on the Lord.
Yeah, 10-4.
That shield of faith.
10-4, back door.
Mr. Terry, bring it on down the line one time.
1988. I was farming in Homestead, Florida. And when I first went down there, we grew a lot of beans and other stuff, but it had got down to mostly turnip greens and collards. And I had built me a real good business down there. Stores and fruit stands and everything all over Miami and Homestead, hauling them collards and turnip greens. And when I didn't have them in my field, we hauled them from South Carolina or Georgia or somewhere. And this certain trip, we loaded in right south of Tifton, Georgia, a load of collards, me and my wife, on this old trailer that my daddy bought brand new in 1953 from Stainless Steel Fruhoff trailer, top of the line. We hadn't been in the family that long, but I found it and I bought it back and I was using it. Anyhow, we loaded, got the collard greens loaded that evening, and we come on down to Adel, Georgia, which is south of there, and snow ice all over the top of them. So they'd be, or you have to pack them in ice, and then you snow ice all over the top of them to keep them cold. And when I come off the exit there at Adel, we usually eat supper there too. They had a real good restaurant there, truck stop. I come off the exit there at Adel, and I hit my brake, and I heard something pop, and something give a little bit, and I, man, what was that? So we went on and got top-iced and eat and got ready to head south. And that, what had happened, the pin, you've seen pins on tractor and trailers. You know, and the trailer's got the pin and then it latches. All right, the pin didn't break, but the plate broke out. It was so old, you know, in the war. The plate broke out about that big around. but it was up in there, and they wasn't hardly nothing going to make it come out. So we hit it on down the road, and I had a route that I run to miss the South Jersey. It wasn't on account of being overloaded, but my rigs were so old, I didn't want to get caught with DOT. My tractor was old.
They don't even take any chance.
Everything was old. So I had a route that when I left ADL, I go to the east and go down there and miss the South Georgia skills. And then I'd cross the interstate 75 and go to the right on down to I-10 and miss the North Florida skills. But they had an inspection station. Didn't have no scales on that little road. It was Highway 29. But they had an inspection station, and I pulled in there, and the guy come walking. There's one of them deals where they don't have a lot of traffic. He come walking over there and one of them, "Hey, Mr. Thomas, you got on collard greens?" I said, "You need some." I don't remember if he – sometime I'd give them greens if they wanted them. But anyhow, the DOT was there and had a truck expecting it right in front of me. And I would have sat there, boy, I was worried, man. I knew I was in trouble. But then finally, that inspector, he said, "I ain't no telling how long he'll be with that guy. You just go ahead." So I went ahead and got out on I-10 to a fuel stop and fueled up. And I crawled under there and reached up in there at fifth wheel, got out a whole handful of rust. You know, I said, "Dadgum." And I talked to my wife about it, about trying to get somebody to fix it. And I said, "Well, if I do, we'll probably lose this load. Then he may call DOT on me." I said, "I don't think that thing's going to bounce out of there. We're going to Miami." So she got in a sleeper and prayed, she said. And I think she probably did. And I was driving, and I done all my braking with the handbrake, you know, the trailer brake. Mm-hmm. I didn't brake with a tractor brake. So, you know, it hold the load off of me. And by time to go to work and my customers the next morning, about 8 o'clock, we was in Miami with that load. And we unloaded the whole load that day. And the next day I carried the trailer down to a big welding shop that I'd used to hold out down at Homestead. And they put me a new plate in there. And that was, there ain't no telling. If they'd have caught me, well, they'd have took everything, truck and all.
Great day.
But you made the trip.
We made the trip, and God saw us through it.
Those prayers worked, and I bet I get sleepy when I drive sometimes, and this is horrible. I bet you wasn't sleepy one bit.
I didn't sleep. I wasn't a bit asleep.
I bet you wasn't.
I don't think she slept. Now we had a sleeper on that old Ford tractor. It's a cab over Ford tractor. And she said she prayed all the way.
I bet.
But
I was praying today.
Uh-oh.
But I tried to stay out of traffic as much as I could.
Oh, I bet.
You know, mm-hmm. And we made it.
I was coming across 278 today. And I thought the DOT loves staying in between Brooksville and Snead up there.
Yeah.
And I was coming through there and I thought, Lord, I just really don't want to talk to the DOT man today. I really didn't have anything wrong, but at the same time, you don't want to talk to him.
Yeah.
I topped the hill and I saw blue lights in the opposite lane coming towards me. And he was getting in the median. I thought, ain't no way. And he got right behind the truck that was in front of me. And I thought, thank you, Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, that truck.
Thank you, that. I'm sorry for you, buddy. And I just peeled over in the other lane and went right by. He was getting out, going to talk to that truck. And I was one truck away from having to talk to the DOT today.
Yeah.
I was thankful I didn't. Kind of like Mr. Terry was that day he went to Miami.
Any day I can go without getting pulled over is a good one. Let's take it back over to Rob.
Well, I have a good friend in Hazelhurst, Mississippi. His name is Jimmy Whittington, and he's a real outdoorsman. He especially is good at setting hooks on the Big Black River down between Vicksburg and Port Gibson. We go down there, it runs into the Mississippi. And lately, when I was young, I could stay with anybody, but I slowed down for several reasons, and I have to have a lot of help. But I still like to think I can do anything anybody can do. Of course, you have to be honest with yourself. But we were coming around the river bend, saw a limb jerking. Boy, we all excited. You know how you get. We got an old Jimmy said, "It's a good one." He was at the front of the boat. I was back there at the motor. We were in my boat. And his son, Gannon Whittington, was with us. We call him G-Man. And he said, "Oh, it's a big one, y'all." We getting all excited, getting the net and getting ready. And about that time, up out of the water came a prehistoric monster with a head about as wide as my two fists. And I went to hollering right then, "Jimmy, don't put that thing in the boat." He said, "Oh, yeah, Rob." And in a superhuman feat of strength, he reached down there, and the turtle big as a wash tub.
Turtle?
A loggerhead snapping turtle, alligator, ferocious Tyrannosaurus Rex snapping turtle. And Jimmy put that blooming thing in the boat. And listen, it's every man for himself. I grabbed his youngin', got him between me and that turtle. He treed me on top of that Tohatsu 50 horse.
You was in the back of the boat.
Yeah, I'm up on the motor hollering, "Jimmy." And each time I say his name, it exponentially becomes higher pitch and more frantic. "Jimmy! Jimmy! Jimmy!" And that turtle starts biting my boat and removing chunks of aluminum from the seat.
Great day.
I could see Civil War musket balls in his shell and arrowheads from... eons ago. That thing was 185 years old. And I stuck a boat paddle at him. He bit that thing in two. Had another boat paddle. Had a machete. I was going to whack him with it. He bit the machete in two. And Jimmy's laughing the whole time. I'm having a panic attack. I'm treed up on top of that motor. And my decision was, do I bail off in this river where that train lives and his kinfolks are, or do I stay here and fight him, which ain't going too good because all my equipment is in two pieces now. And that turtle looked like he's in four-wheel drive. Had claws that long. He's coming up over stuff. And it was so horrifying. And Jimmy Whittington laughed all the way through it. He finally grabbed the thing, threw it in the river like it wasn't nothing. Now, I told a story about a snake a while ago that made me talk ugly. But throw a snake on me, I'll sleep with a snake. I don't want no more of them loggerheads, alligators, snapping turtles.
No, sir.
Well, it's great that he's talked about the loggerhead. Terry told a loggerhead story the last time he was on the show.
They took it to the zoo to see if they wanted to put it in the zoo.
Them, but they wouldn't take it.
They too mean. They can't have anything up around the
world. Well, they keep turtles. They
not them loggerheads.
Well, I don't know if it's a loggerhead or not, but they keep turtles. turtle's head was bigger than the football that we caught up here. And if he hadn't been almost drowned, we would never got him.
Wouldn't never got him.
This one here was drowned. Fresh.
He was live action.
Yeah.
That one was.
Oh, Lord, a turtle.
We got some live action today. We're going to take a moment here in the middle of the show. We had two gifts this week, and one of them is some pictures.
From Mr. Bill.
From Mr. Bill. It's we've been in Ephesus every week in the show in the scripture time, and he sent me some pictures from Ephesus, and they're on an SD card. So
we'd love to show you, but...
We can show you the SD card. Yeah. But it's
maybe
not going to be
some in the slide.
Yeah. There. I have to maybe put some of those in the show. So thank you, Mr. Bill, for the pictures. And then we haven't opened this.
Nope.
Do you want to open it?
I started, but that's just because I was trying to protect the name of the innocent.
Protect the innocent.
Let's see what we got here. We got a letter.
Got a little note, and
we got a letter.
Look who got a letter.
Oh, man. Customized.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Look at that. I love it.
That's
look at these, really man. Nice. I know on Spotify and Apple, you can't see these. You have to go look at the video, but they got two custom hats. One's an H, an Alabama, and a P. And then the other is our logo on the left side. Man, that is awesome. Really appreciate that. Let's see what we got here. And then the name's on the bag. You made first Moffitt. Name? Okay. Hello, I'm Corey Moffitt. I really enjoy the podcast. I love hearing stories of people that just enjoy life. I could sit and listen to folks tell stories all day long. I really appreciate the Bible reading at the end of the shows, too. He has a little business making high-quality leather-style patch hats, and we believe it because he has sent us some. I want to show my appreciation, y'all, and send these hats. Let me know if y'all would like some more. Keep entertaining. Corey. Corey, thank you.
Yeah.
Man, love these hats. And nice. Maybe we'll just, if you have a business, maybe we can put a little link in there. Somebody's looking for some leather patches.
Yep.
He can hook them up.
And they look good. And they look good.
Absolutely. And he's got them on the Richardson 112. You can't go wrong with that.
Can't go wrong with that.
Well, you got anything, any little story besides your
Well, Robin your truck? Was talking about the boat there. I've been meaning to talk to tell about the time they put the wrong person behind the steering wheel of a yacht.
I'm interested.
You want to hear it?
Yeah.
When I was 8 or 9 years old, I went on an adventure. And the adventure was to catch a yacht over here in the Alabama River and leave there. We were in Jasper, picked up in Jasper, and leave there and make it all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. My dad had a friend who, when I say yacht, it was a yacht to me. It was just a large boat.
It's huge. This is a story. Tell them. It's huge. Massive.
Massive.
This is a massive yacht. Boat.
Like a battleship.
Yeah, battleship. Yacht. And
you're on the USS Alabama.
I'm on the USS Alabama in the Alabama River. So this just or the beginning of the no, it wasn't the Alabama River. It was the Black Warrior River. Warrior River.
So you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
I'm in the middle of the Pacific.
Well, you're going backwards.
So going backwards. We're actually paddling. So we're on the boat, and you get to spend the night a few times. So it's an overnight, 3 or 4 time trip. And about the second night, as an 8-year-old, I had seen all the riverside I could see. Like, all right, this is enough, right? And so I start asking questions about driving the boat. And Mr. Hallmark, who owned the boat, he said, yeah, you can drive the boat. It's not a problem.
He don't know you like we do.
He don't know me very well. That's exactly right, Mr. Robin. He had no idea that I had never driven a boat, first and foremost, in my entire life, in all of my 8 years. And secondly, I could not see over the steering wheel, but I was not going to tell him that. I just needed a direction, I thought. I thought it was kind of like the train. You know, you just make it go forward and it takes care of the rest.
It's on tracks.
It's on the tracks. It's in the water. It's going to follow the water.
Mm-hmm.
I get behind the steering wheel of the boat. What is it? What'd that be called? Would it be the steering wheel or what is? See how much of a boater I am. What?
Ain't no steering wheel. It's a whatever you call it.
I've never been called? On a battleship.
You don't call it a steering wheel.
Rudder.
Oh no, not rudder. The rudder's at the back.
Yeah,
that's the what wheel. Steered it. So I'm behind the wheel. I'm in charge of the direction of the ship at this point in time. And Mr. Hallmark's last words of instruction is, watch out for the sandbars. Yes, sir. They'll sneak up on you. Watch out for the sandbars. Okay. He proceeds to leave me at the steering wheel of the ship and go down to the lower chambers, like the Lord was that day that they were going across. You know, he said, we're going to go to the other side. And he's going to go take a nap. And I'm driving, and I'm doing a great job. Up until I look ahead, and I see it appears the water is getting shallower. But I'm, again, having to look beside the wheel to see where I'm going.
Are you the only one up there?
I'm the only one up there.
We need to contact human services.
Yes.
I'm the only one up there. Moments later, we come to an abrupt stop. Immediate stop. When I dry dock this yacht.
Let's all use our imagination. What the guy that was driving it to let you drive it looked like when you changed.
That's what I want to know.
Well, he was ejected from his sleeping quarters, and he immediately ran up and he said, "What happened?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "I told you to watch out for the sandbars." What's a sandbar? I didn't know.
It's good to know that. Definitions.
You got to watch for them. You need to know what
they were. I didn't know what they were. He said, what we're sitting on now is a sandbar. So that was the day that they put the wrong person
in charge
of the ship. He had to call.
Like a tugboat or something?
Yeah, like a tugboat. Tug us off there. Backed us up. But that reminded me, we were talking the other day, how in life, if you put the wrong person, the wrong captain in charge of your ship, you're going to make shipwreck real quick.
Navigation's important.
You just teed me up. It was as though we talked about this.
But we didn't.
We did not. Gulf Shores 4 years ago on the canal that runs behind and separates Gulf Shores, makes it an island. We go out on a center console that Mike owned all the time fishing. Well, we would go fishing in the morning. Usually the girls would come on in the afternoon. We'd go joy boat riding. Well, we did that. Beautiful afternoon. Mm-hmm. And we're out there and with a million other people. And we took out, trailered the boat there and took out right under the bridge that you drive over 59 to go into Gulf Shores. Yeah. Well, there's a boat ramp right under. Beautiful, nice boat ramp. We ease up to the boat ramp. Day is done. Great day. And there is a huge yacht.
Probably
boat.
The one that I was.
It was not the USS Alabama. But it was one of those big ones. Like that we'll never afford. No matter what happens to us, we'll never be able to buy one of these boats. Well, that ramp has one. It's one ramp. It's not multiple boats. And he is doing everything he can. He would go up and then he'd go down and then he'd go up and get over the fender well and then he'd back down. This goes on for as long as Philip can take it. I've had all I can take of this. And, Bethany's already tugging on my shirt. Yeah, she knows the words are loaded up in my vocal gun. And I said, "Hey, buddy, if you could afford a boat like that, it looks like you could drive it."
Oh, we did not.
That's encouraging.
That was just some words of encouragement. He turns around and looks, and he says, "I am so sorry. I just bought this boat, and I've never owned a boat before. And I can't get it back on the trailer." Well, now I feel about this tall, about an inch tall.
Yeah.
And I said, "Can I help you put your boat on the trailer?" Now, my greatest length of boat at this point is a 19.6 Ranger. That's my, and this one's probably got another 10 or 15 feet on that 19.6 Ranger. But I would board his boat, and the canal is always running. So that's one of the things that causes trouble because
there's
a current.
The captain now.
But I get in, and here I am, redneck feel, in a $200,000 boat. And I'm thinking,
"Hey, this is
boy, I never would have thought this. I have made it." And I said, "And you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to put this on the trailer the very first time." Mm-hmm. So I hit it in reverse, and they're all just sitting there watching me. He's taking notes, mm-hmm. like Robin said, because he wants to know how to do this in the future too.
Yeah,
his second trip out, he wants to be able to put it on the trailer. I back it out. I run that thing up on the trailer, climb up there, hang over the front of the boat, put the hook on it, and just look at him.
"Oh, you did it.
Man, that was a really good job. You must know how to drive a boat." I said, "Sir, if you were going to buy a boat like this, you probably needed to drive a little smaller one before you can do this." And in my you know, my chest poking out a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife and kids just watched Daddy win the battle. Did up that. There.
That's my man.
Every other boat that I've ever owned, yeah, my man. You know, every other boat that I've ever owned, I depart from the boat back onto the land the same fashion. I get on the edge of the boat and I jump off of it.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
I did the same exact thing. I got my feet on the edge of the boat. I had my flip-flops on, and off I went, and I went, and I went, and I thought, oh, my goodness. Man, I hit the ground, did a belly roll, three or four rolls, and I thought that my shins had since replaced my kneecaps. And so all of my pride and all of my glory is now a dirty, sandy, muddy mess down there, and I just carried on like that was the plan the entire time. But just
what's the proverb?
Pride comes before fall.
Oh, there it is.
And that fall from a yacht was a long fall that day. I'll never forget it. And I never looked back at that boat. I just went
look,
and got back.
There's a lot of pressure at a boat ramp.
There is a lot of pressure.
When Joe Redneck looked over there and he can drive that thing, you got current and going fast, going too slow. But the worst pressure I see applied is when they start backing these trailers down.
Oh.
I saw a wife doing it, and she had done held up everybody a couple times. I said, ma'am, you want me to back that boat down? She said, my husband would sure appreciate it.
Hmm.
He was in the boat, and they were having communications.
They was communicating.
Encouraging one another.
Yeah, right.
And I got in there, and first thing I did, I took his bifocals off and laid them on the dashboard, backed him down there. I've been backing stuff all my life. You know, not that I can stand some improvement at it, because sometimes I mess up. But I jumped out, forgot my glasses, was riding down the river, and realized, dummy, you big man back the boat, but you forgot your glasses.
Can't see nothing.
I'm trying to bifocal that thing without bifocal.
Yeah, you're just looking up, looking down, nothing's changing.
About 3 weeks later, I was in Walmart in Brookhaven, Mississippi. I heard the lady holler, "Wee!" And she come and hugged my neck. And I'm not opposed to that, but it's not an everyday occurrence.
Yeah.
And she said, would you like your glasses back? I said, yes, I would. She recognized who I was, had my glasses with her. She said, I've been asking everybody, who's that nice guy that backed my boat down?
What is Brother Blink.
Brother Blink done lost his glasses.
I wonder if she's ever seen you on the show.
That's that young, nice guy that backed my boat in. If you've seen it, comment.
Yeah, leave us a comment if that was you.
Is this the show of little miracles? What is going on here? It's just miracle after miracle we continue to talk about.
My miracle is I didn't have two broke legs.
I tell you what, you talked about falling off that boat, how sometimes that will belittle you or humble you. I used to get real humble when I got notes home from the teacher at school about your child. Because we all want to think our little precious darling couldn't do anything. We got a note one day, and my wife said, you read that, that's your son. And I said, all right. I got the note and said, Dear Mr. Risher, will you quit sending sardines up here with that boy to eat? And apparently what had happened was they had smelled up the whole classroom because sardines stink. I love my young, and I'd do anything in the world for him, but we cut the sardines off. They became completely hunting and fishing and daddy-son outing.
Snacks.
Extracurricular food.
Yes.
I love a sardine, but you are exactly right. The after lingering effects of some sort will run you out of a building.
In a classroom with a bunch of hot, sweaty young boys.
Added to it.
And Jake was passing out. Here, you want one?
He was sharing.
That's what he'd been taught to do.
Yeah.
Share and share alike. The only sardines I ever bought was put in a raccoon trap, and a raccoon wouldn't even eat them.
We were in engineering school, and they like to play pranks on one another. And Evan Morgan had gotten Brent Helms and just really ribbed him one too many times. And me and Evan, we was headed down to work. We worked together at Sayer Construction, and we headed out. And I looked at Evan. He looked at me, and the longer we went, the worse it got. And I said, son, something has happened in this truck, and you're going to have to let me out. He said, I thought that was you, something you did. And I said, no, it ain't nothing I did. I said, it's in this vehicle, and we got to get out of here. And the longer we was in it, it was a cold day. You know, he turned the heater on, heater just blowing. And I said, Evan, you're going to have to sell this truck. He said, I don't know what's wrong with it. He pulled over to the side. He went and popped the hood. He looked down there, and Brent had stashed a can of sardines on that manifold, and it had absolutely baked. And you talking about a smell that will run you out of a cab. It was a single cab Mazda B1500 or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And then that thing, it stunk for months after that.
Brent won. Evan Brent zero. Won.
Evan zero, buddy.
Mr. Terry, you said you had us another one.
Yeah. This was in April. And I had planted some late, for down there it was late peas and late squash. Not no big acreage, but, you know, 2 or 3 acres of each one of them. And they was coming along real good, still young. And the cold spell, unnatural cold spell for that late in the spring, was coming in. It was going to be frost. We was in real low land. In fact, edge of the Everglades. And so me and this boy that was working for me, we hauled a bunch of tires and lined up on the north and the northwest side, because most of your wind come from the northwest, you know, when you just had a front or anything. And we lined up them tires. And about 12 or 1, when it got real cold and you saw it was really going to frost, we lit them up. And had diesel fuel up there to put on, had inner tubes to start, you know, with a tire. And then anyhow, we burnt tires the rest of the night. And boy, we had a smoke going, it wouldn't quit. Which, well, that wasn't the first time we'd ever done that, but this time I happened to be right in the edge of the Everglades. But anyhow, about daylight, I went to the house, and it's Sunday morning. Now, this is Saturday night. Sunday morning, I mean, we didn't normally go to church, but I've been working all day and then the whole night. And I went to the house and laid down. And about 8 o'clock, Barbara woke me up and said, you better get on your big tractor. And I had my big tractor was one of them that swivels in the middle, you know, with dual front back, big John Deere. And I didn't farm a lot of acreage that I needed one that big. We had wetland, and I needed that traction. But anyhow, I could have probably got on that tractor and went up there and cut out somewhere that was burning and put it out. But I felt so bad, I got up and looked. I said, I ain't doing it. I'm going to lay back down. Well, about 11 o'clock, she woke me up and said, the forest ranger, she's gone. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. They come looking for Miss Tim.
Well, they was going to put that fire out. Yeah. Forest rangers are going in there. And, right at that time of the year, I didn't have but one guy that was helping us go. We didn't have a lot of work to do. And I got him and Barbara, and I said, we better go somewhere. know, just let's go. So we took off.
I need to go somewhere.
We took off and stayed gone all day.
Yeah.
And come back after dark, and they were still up there. I didn't know, you know, what they was doing. You couldn't see no lot of fire or nothing, but they were still up there. And then a little bit, a guy come down through there and stopped. And I guess he thought I ought to know what was going on. And he said that, said they ain't going to get that truck out of there tonight. Said it'll be tomorrow. I said, what happened? He said, well, two lady forest rangers come driving in. They wasn't the first ones that come. They come in later and parked that new Chevrolet truck right on top of where it had been burning tires all night long. And it melted it down.
Good.
It burned it. Oh, man. When they got it, the horn was laying there and this was laying there, you know. And so the next morning, I could see the activity going on up there. And I told that boy and my wife, I said, listen, it was just a mile to town. I mean, we was out in the boondocks, but 1 mile it was city, you know, big grocery stores and McDonald's and everything. I said, let's get out of here for a little while. And when we headed up that way, here come this Jeep with a blue light on it and pulled me over. And I wanted to know if I was Terry Thomas. I said, yes, sir, because he'd done been talking to some people. Anyhow, he said, I need to talk to you. And I said, well, I'm just going to run up here to the store. And I did. Yeah, I didn't want to go right then. I said, I'm going to run up here to the store, and I'll be back. When I get back, I'll come up there. And he said, okay. So we was gone a little bit, and I come back, and I drove up there to where he was at. And first thing he done was started reading me my rights.
The Miranda rights.
Yeah, and I said, are you going to arrest me? He said, no, not right now, but said anything you say can be used against you, you know, in a court of law. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, I'm honest. I said, well, I'll answer anything. But, boy, my lawyer tore me up on that. He said, yeah, you don't ever talk.
Nothing.
But he wanted to know if all them fuel cans was mine. I said, yeah, they've been burned up, too. The fuel cans were burned up. And he wanted to know this. I said, yeah. I had a lawyer that I'd used a little bit, and I got in touch with him, and I got him to come out there and look. My lawyer said, I don't believe you're allowed to pay for the truck. Said, you might have to pay for something, but said, them people ought to have better sense than to drive that truck up a straddle of them hot coals. They'd been there all night long. But I guess it's long in August. My lawyer called me. Said, I can get you out of this for $375.
Money.
I said, a check will be in the mail today.
Yep. Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
I had a fellow the other day who didn't know me from Adam's House Cat. And that's really kind of my favorite, is just meeting somebody new, because usually you're kind of yourself. Mm-hmm. And we were just having a conversation and using some colorful adjectives. He was using some colorful adjectives and talking about all types of things. And I was just listening to the conversation. And just took it in. You know, I didn't feel like that it was time to preach a sermon. It wasn't Sunday morning or anything like that. But that kind of, there's a scripture passage I'd like to share with you. Jesus talks about that a little bit, that I think we can apply to that situation and how I have adopted a different approach to those types of situations. And these are Jesus's words.
Red letter.
Red letter words. Matthew chapter 7, verse 1. Jesus said, do not judge others, and you will not be judged. Second verse, for you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging
is the standard by which you will be judged. Let's say this to begin. I'm not supporting sin. I'm not supporting disobedience or others or myself in doing that. But the first thing that I'd like to say, and I think this is clear, is there's one true judge, mm-hmm. and that's God.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason I say that in that term, let me be real careful here, because a judge has to be able to give a verdict. Only God can give the verdict, guilty or innocent. And we know that innocent, the only way to be innocent is to believe in Jesus Christ and have his blood mm-hmm. and be your sins be paid for through by Christ. Him. Okay. But there's a key thing in this. We can make an assessment.
Yeah.
As Christians. Well, you're called to make assessments. Need to be making some assessments in your life or you're going to get yourself in a whole lot of trouble. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between making an assessment and making a judgment or handing out a verdict. Yeah. So we're called to not hand out verdicts because we can't. But here's what I want to say. Treat others as you want to be treated. And you say, well, how are you supposed to treat somebody who isn't living for the Lord or who's sinning against the Lord? The
same way you want to be treated before you started living for the Lord.
Amen.
Or the same way you'd like to be treated by God.
Yeah.
Some grace.
I want to give a pro tip. If you're a Christian out there and you're listening to the podcast, I'm going to give you something. I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm going to tell you something that's helped me out as a Christian. Anytime I start trying to lean towards the judgment zone or lean towards treating somebody a certain way because they're not acting like a Christian, all I have to do is remember a man by the name of Philip and how even as a young Christian, I acted not like a Christian.
Yeah.
And some days, if you'll follow me around long enough, you may say, well, you ain't acting like a Christian right now. So remembering the grace that God gave me to save my soul and remembering the grace that he continues to give me every day as I ask for forgiveness allows me to try my best to follow Jesus's command here to treat others as you'd like to be treated and as you've been treated, which is forgiven.
And what we're not saying is don't overlook sin, act like it's not there, because sin matters.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely does.
And you need to call a spade, a sin. But your intentions, what's your motivation? Are you trying to put somebody down or are you trying to lift somebody up?
Well, and you talked about the intentions and the motivation. When you say whatever it is that you're saying or when you think whatever it is that you're thinking, are you trying to place emphasis on Christ or are you trying to make yourself feel better about your own self? And that's the difficult part. And because we talked about this extensively before we wanted to, go over the scripture we always do and beforehand. So that way we know that we're all aligned together with the scripture. But what we cannot do is take the standard. That's what it talks about in the last verse. We can't take the standard and say, well, the standard is me. Look how I'm living. Look how well I do. That's not the standard. The standard is God's word. And that's what we're assessing on. That's what we're hoping and living by. Because Philip, you said it earlier, you can't look at someone and say, well, that person's hopeless, because there is no such thing as hopeless. As long as there's breath in my body, Christ and God Almighty can make a difference and can make a change.
That's just how powerful his grace is.
That's how powerful it is, right? And how do I know that? Because Philip said earlier, I have received it myself.
Because when the plate come by me, I had a good double help.
That's right. That's exactly right. And what did Paul say? God's grace is sufficient.
Amen.